We are in a series that we've been doing for a bit called Heroes and Villains, recognizing this, that within all of us, there is that stuff that we would say is really, really good because we were created in the image of God. All of us bear that image. And then there's also that stuff in us that God continues to work out that we might be conformed into the image of His Son. And with every single person in the Bible, with the exception of Jesus Himself, we can recognize that they are human. And so whether or not they hit like hero status for us, we also recognize there's always another side to it. There's this and that for every single one of us. And this morning, I want us to get thinking around this with this thought that it's typically easier to figure out the right thing to do than it is to figure out the right thing to believe. It's easier to determine what it is we should do than it is to determine what it is we should believe. And I think for a lot of us here, there certainly is some of us, maybe a lot of us, we grew up with a mentality that what you believe is way more important, so much so, and nobody would have said this to us, or if they did, it would have been far in and few between that would ever say this, but the thought that what you believe matters so much that what you do maybe doesn't matter that much, because if you believe right, then all you have to do when you do wrong is to just ask for forgiveness, no harm, no foul. Almost like what we do doesn't matter that much, even in our lifetime, as long as when we finally die, at least you have believed right. Make sure you have that right. And that kind of thinking can actually take us down the road to create a bumper sticker that says, the only difference between you and me is that I'm forgiven. As if what we believe shouldn't somehow be impacting what we do, how we behave. And the truth is, what you believe will always drive what you do. So here's what I think is pretty shocking about the Bible. And it's this, that if we were really to look at what it is that we are to believe according to the scripture, it's actually really quite simple. When you boil it down, there's one simple truth there that is pretty recognizable. And it's not that hard to determine it. We know that Jesus came and that Jesus died. Jesus rose again and Jesus is coming back. And when Jesus asked his disciples, what do people believe about me? He was receiving a couple different answers from them. But then he drilled down and said, what is it that you believe about me? And Peter responded, having been with him, having spent time with him, having seen the disciples, his students, having traveled with him, he said, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And it's on that belief that Jesus built his church. In fact, it's that foundational truth that all Christians across the planet, we are as one on that truth that Jesus came, Jesus died, Jesus rose again, Jesus is coming back, but Jesus is the Son of God. He is the Christ, the Son of the living God. Every other detail concerning what we believe is really just detail around that one, simply a detail. Now, near the end of his ministry, out of that belief that he is the Christ, he is the Son of the living God, Jesus drilled down to what it is we should do. He gave us a do to engage in this world by saying these words in the Gospel of John. He said, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone would know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Three times in two sentences, love one another, love one another, love one another. This is the new command that I give you. Here's how you are to operate. Sometimes it's easier to know what to do than it is to what to believe. And Jesus made it really clear when he was being asked, what is it that is the greatest commandment? He spoke basically these words, boiling it all down to this: you are to love God and love people. If you can nail these two, all the rest, like you get that right, and everything else you won't get wrong. Why? Because everything that we do hangs on these two, loving God and loving people. Now imagine with me a world or a community, a Jenison, Hudsonville, Granville, Zeeland, Holland, Wyoming. Imagine with me a region, a world in which people may not be sure about what we believe, because it's harder sometimes to figure out the right thing to believe. They may not be sure about what we believe, but they are sure about what we do, because it's easier to figure out what the right thing to do is. And they would look at us and say, they've nailed the stuff that really, really matters. I don't know about what they believe, but I do know about the way they behave. Now, in order to chase that thought today, I want to talk about a hero of the Bible that many of us, maybe because of his heroic status and his feats of strength, has risen to the top for many of us. His name is Samson. And we're going to find the story in Judges 13, 14, 15, 16. We're going to be in chapter 13 today for the most part, and then we'll bounce through the other chapters as well. But the story reads like this. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And I want to pause there, because the journey of the Israelites, and probably your journey and my journey, the journey of God's people, has been that we get it right and then we don't get it right. And there are times we're closer and times we are farther away, and times where the intimacy and the desire to just do it God's way is first and foremost in our minds. And then somehow we wander. And there's an old song that says, I'm prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the one I love. And in this one, the Israelites were leaving the one that they love. They did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. A certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, you are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now see to it that you do not drink, that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, and that you do not eat anything unclean. You would become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb. He will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines. Then the woman went to her husband and told him, a man of God came to me. He looked like an angel of God. Very awesome. I didn't ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name. But he said to me, you will become pregnant and have a son. Now then, drink no wine or other fermented drink, and do not eat anything unclean, because the boy will be a Nazarite from God, of God, from the womb until the day of his death. Then Manoah prayed to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I beg you to let the man of God you sent to us come again to teach us how to bring up the boy who is to be born. God heard Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman while she was out in the field, but her husband Manoah was not with her. The woman hurried to tell her husband, he's here, the man who appeared to me the other day. Manoah got up and followed his wife. When he came to the man, he said, are you the man who talked to my wife? I am, he said. So Manoah asked him, when your words are fulfilled, such a great question, what is to be the rule that governs the boy's life and work? The angel answered, "Your wife must do all that I've told her." That one line right there is worth zeroing in on it, because I don't know if there's a more powerful question that could be asked at the point at which you're having a conversation with an angel, which, I mean, who does that, right? But here's Manoah having a conversation with an angel about his son. And he asks the question that should be asked. And I don't know if there's a more powerful question, really. When we think about our belief system driving our do system, what we do, this is a powerful, powerful question to ask. What is to be the rule that governs this boy's life and work? What is to be the rule that governs this boy's life and work? It is core to what will drive Samson in his life. Like, what is it going to be that is going to be the driving force in this guy's life? And the answer that was given by the angel is that your wife has already heard he is to be a Nazarite. Now, here's what we know about the Nazarites. The Nazarites were a people that were set apart. They took a dedication, or they were consecrated for really showing the way that we are to live in this world. That was primary. And then they would have some secondary, that they would have some secondary things that they would be noted for. In the book of Numbers, chapter 6, we actually see these words about what it is a Nazarite was to do. The Lord spoke to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, if a man or woman wants to make a special vow, a vow of dedication, a vow that says, 'Lord, I want to be your man. I want to be your woman in this world. I want to be somebody that is pointing true north for the people that I live among.' If a man or a woman makes a vow of dedication to the Lord as a Nazarite, they must abstain from wine and other fermented drink, or must not drink vinegar made from the wine or other fermented drink. They also," next slide please, "are to have no razor that would be used on their head. They must be holy until the period of their dedication to the Lord is over. The Nazarite must not go near a dead body. Throughout the period of their dedication, they are to be consecrated to the Lord." So first and foremost for these Nazarites is this dedication to God, this desire to live for God, a desire to be God's person. And in this case, it was an honor for Samson's mother, who was barren, to say, "I'll start the charge. Even as my child is in the womb, I'll begin to live into this dedication, this vow for my son named Samson." And what would it look like to be God's person in this world? What would it look like to live in such a way that you point the way among a people that may have lost their way? And certainly verses, there are plenty of them that we could point to in the Old Testament in the days of Samson. We could point to those verses that come after that show the heartbeat of God. We could look to the New Testament even and say, what is the way of God? We can look to Micah, the prophet, that said this in Micah 6, verse 8, that the way is this, that you would love justice. You would act justly. You would love mercy. You would walk humbly with God. That this is the kind of vow. This is the kind of dedication. This is the kind of person I want to be. That when there's a need in the world and something's out of whack, I want to step into the middle of that and bring healing and hope to that. When it comes to mercy, man, I will be the first to extend it because I've been the recipient of it. And when it comes to humility, well, my God, especially us that understand the way of Christ in this world, my God sent into this world His Son who became humble, even to point of death on the cross for me. And I want to live in this fashion. That's the primary goal of a Nazarite. Now they have these secondary goals. Don't drink. Don't drink alcohol. And along with that, do not put a razor to your head. And along with that, don't touch dead bodies. These were just things that set them apart. One of those actually reminds me of when my son was getting his very first haircut. And Kathy was like, can you get his hair cut? And I went, yeah, I'll take him in for his first haircut. And his hair was super soft. And he had curls on the back of his hair that almost did a full circle back here. And my wife and I had one of those failures to communicate well with each other, because she sent me and said something like, save his curls. And so I took off to the barber and got his hair cut, and I came home and I presented him. He's looking really sharp, and I presented him to Kathy, and Kathy looked at him and she got really sad, and I'm like, something's wrong here. And it looked like she was going to cry. And she said, I thought I asked you to save the curls. To which I was so proud, I pulled out a plastic baggie and went, I did. Like, here they are. And apparently that was the wrong thing, but let me tell you this. He never grew another curl in his life. Hello, I saved the curls here for our family, right? But these are the secondary vows. The primary one, if you think about it, is I want to be God's person in this world. Now, what we don't know about Samson from reading chapter 13, and I would encourage you today, read 14, 15, and 16, because there is so much in there. But just reading the story, just from these handful of chapters, what we don't know is what kind of conversation did he have with his dad or his mom when he was younger? Did the conversation ever come up? Hey, there was an angel of the Lord that talked to us about your life and begin to cast vision for his life, that you are going to be pointing true north for the people of Israel, that when it comes to live in the way of God, you are to be set apart for that work in this world. And an angel appeared to us and spoke it to your mom. And your mom began that journey even when you were in the womb, so that from the womb on, you would be that person in the world. Did the conversation ever come up that you're not to drink? Probably, right? Most of us have that conversation with our kids at some point, but you're not to drink. And why don't you ever cut my hair? All my friends, their hair is cut. Why is my hair so long in the conversation? We don't have those details in the early life of Samson. What we do have is this incredible story of enormous strength that he had. What we know from history is Samson actually got compared to Hercules, the Greek god Hercules, in terms of the enormity of his strength. And just to name a few of the feats of his strength that we see in chapters 14, 15, and 16, we see him tearing apart a lion with his bare hands. His two hands are his only weapon. We see him at one point routing 30 men all by himself and killing every single one of them. We see him at one point taking the jawbone of a donkey, because that's the only weapon he could grab, and he went on a rampage killing 1,000 people. Apparently, this guy had strength that went beyond strength. Question being this: what is the rule that is to govern this boy's life and his work? What is the rule that is to govern Samson's life and his life's work? The angel said, I shared it with your wife. Here's what he's meant to be in this world. Then in a world that's lost its way, the Philistine people had become an abomination to God. And the Israelite people, we already read it, were at this time in history doing evil in the sight of God. Among people that have lost their way, he is to be the one that points the way in which you are to live. And yet, when we think about the primary role of a Nazarite, We don't see a lot of that in the story that gets told. Well, we see in 14, 15, and 16, we see a lot of hatred. We see a lot of vengeance. We see a lot of anger. We see a lot of violence. We see a guy that took a vow that is from the womb. He was not to touch a dead body. How many dead bodies did his hands produce and he touched? How much blood did he have on his hands? A guy that is not to cut his hair, and yet he reveals that secret to someone that was trying to deceive him. And he knew she was trying to deceive him, and his hair was cut. We see compromise all over the place, and eventually we see his life end up in a place between he and the Philistines where it's a this or that, or a this for that. Literally, you lit my family on fire. You lit my wife and my dad on fire. I will tear down your town. I will bring big hurt on you. Because it started with him lighting their fields on fire. And then they lit his family on fire. And then he comes back and destroys their people. And he attacks them. You shame me, I will burn your fields. You burn my people, I will take your people down. I will bring hurt on you. In fact, I would go back to the question, what is the rule that is to govern this boy's life and his work? What is it? And instead of us guessing at it, I would invite us to actually just look at the Bible. And not just the Bible and somebody else's thoughts on it, but what is attributed to Samson as he spoke. Look at these words. It begins with this. I have the right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. Chapter 15, verse 3. What's driving him? What's the rule inside that's driving him? Next one. I swear I won't stop until I get my revenge on you. 15:7. What's driving him? I merely did what they did to me, man. Does that feel like a toddler? He started it. No, you started it. He hit me first. You did. I merely did to them what they did to me. And this one. With a donkey's jawbone, I've made donkeys out of them. I'll read that again. With a donkey's jawbone, I've made donkeys out of them. If you could back up one. That one there. Now, it's cleaned up a bit in the English because the Hebrew says it a little differently than that, right? But the next one, please. So with the donkey's jawbone, I've killed 1,000 men. Can you feel what's driving this guy? And the next one, this one, let me with one blow get revenge. Chapter 16, verse 28. And then the final one, this is at the end of his life. He's saying, with one last blow, one last effort, here's what all I want in my life. It is driving me from the inside out. Let me die with these Philistines. And the story is told that he had his hands on the pillars of a large building with a large number of people in it. And he pushed the pillars out. The roof collapsed and he killed more people in his death than he did in all of his life. What is driving this guy? What is the rule that is driving this man's life? Clearly, Samson's life was wrapped up in vengeance, in revenge, in anger, in disdain, and hatred was driving him to the point where, even in his death, he goes, it's okay if I die, as long as I can take as many people with as possible. The reason I think this is actually worth talking about is because this kind of stuff still happens today. It was 1954, and there was this experiment that took place down in Oklahoma, in a state park in Oklahoma, and we are still analyzing the results of what happened today, and it's because this kind of thing is still happening today. The sort of behavior among each other, a this for a that, a I'm better than you, and it's me versus whatever might else be out there that I feel isn't like me. In 1954, they took two groups and pre-selected them and did not let the groups know about each other. The groups were 11 and 12-year-old boys. And they put them in two separate groups and camped with them and encouraged them for a couple days. Identify with each other. Form identity with one another. Connect with one another. And recognize that you belong to one another. And in so doing, each group came up with a name. There was the Rattlers and there were the Eagles. These two different groups of people. Very much the same, just 11, 12-year-old boys. What they did after just a couple days, and this was the experiment to see what happens when we bring them together and then invite them to compete with one another. So they invited these 11, 12-year-old boys, the Rattlers and the Eagles, to come together and to compete with one another for trophies and for prizes. And what could have happened didn't, but it could have been so simple to go, oh man, we're in the same state park together. We are all boys. You're 11, me too. You're 12, I am too. You like sports, I do too. You like to compete, so do I. This is going to be a riot together. But that is not what happened. When they came together, though, they had all kinds of stuff in common. We're all from Oklahoma here. And what ended up happening was the competition and the identity that they had formed with being a Rattler or being a Eagle began to drive them to the point that they were in each other's faces and speaking over one another. They were trash talking each other, destroying each other's, vandalizing each other's campsite, and eventually fist fights broke out among them on that place right there in Oklahoma. I remember going to sixth grade camp. Some of you probably went. I cannot believe that we actually were allowed to do this. But we had something similar that went on. And we had these groups and we had a name for our groups. And we called ourselves the Red Rider because it's the coolest little BB gun ever, I guess. I don't know. But we were called the Red Riders. And we made up a song. And we changed the words of a song. But the song was, seldom is heard a discouraging word. If you're not a Red Rider, you're a nerd. And we sang that. Like, seriously. We stood up. Some of my best friends weren't Red Riders. And I'm out there calling them all nerds. And we were getting away with that back then. This is the kind of stuff that was going on here. And us versus them mentality showed up in that camp to the level that the most loathsome people on planet Earth are people that made up a name for their group just a couple days ago, and us two who are boys, and us two who are 11 and 12, and us two, and yet there was this division that happened among them. And it's still happening today, isn't it? And we have fun with some of this. It's like Michigan versus Michigan State. Okay, that's just fun stuff for most of us. Some of you need to get over that. But for most of us, it's just fun. We're just having fun with that. But then when it moves past that, and I don't even have to list them. I mean, I could. But when it moves past that, but you don't believe what I believe. You don't think like I think. You didn't vote like I vote. You're not like I am. And before long, the animosity, and you begin to think these people are just from a different world than I am. And no, they're on the same planet. This is what was driving Samson. What rule? We can learn from Samson, but here's the big question. What rule governs your life and your work? What you're doing? Sometimes the easiest way to figure out what you believe is to actually look at, what are you doing? How are you behaving? Because there's a belief system deep down in every one of us, whether you recognize it or not, it's there. How much better to actually know, what is it I want to consecrate myself to, dedicate myself to, making sure that what I believe actually is going to drive the right stuff in my life. And Jesus had a lot to say about this stuff. In fact, he didn't just talk about it. He actually did it. He did something about it. To the church of Ephesus, Paul wrote these amazing words about what Jesus did. He said, Jesus is our peace. He's our shalom. He's the one that broke into this world to see there is a broken world here that I want to put back together. What is missing among these people? I want to bring that so that they can be reconciled and healed to God and each other. Jesus is our peace, who has made the two groups one, and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility, by setting aside in his flesh the law with its commands and regulations. His purpose was to create in himself one new humanity out of the two, thus making peace, and in one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, which he put to death. By which he put to death their hostility. Yeah, the work of Jesus, for sure, church. The work of Jesus is about securing our relationship forever with Jesus. And it's also about what happens right here in this world. Because in those days, there was people groups. There were the circumcised, and there was the uncircumcised. There were the Jews, and there were the Greeks. There were those who are in and those who might be out. In fact, even Samson spoke of the Philistines and called them an uncircumcised people. Like somehow this is a swear word. The worst thing I could say about you. Every part of your humanity is intact except that you don't fit with us. And Jesus came to say, no. I'm taking these two groups. I'm tearing down the barrier, the hostility between. I am reconciling people to people and people to God. What is the rule that is to govern your life? What would it be like? Wonder with me. Because it is harder to determine the right thing to believe than it is to determine the right thing to do. What would it be like in a world like ours, or in Jenison, Hudsonville, Granville, Wyoming, Zeeland, Holland, these surrounding areas? What would it look like if people looked at us and said, I don't know exactly if I'm sure about the way you believe what you believe, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. I don't know if I believe that, but I really like the way you live. I love the way you interact. I love that you have consecrated yourself to, in a world that sometimes looks like it has lost its way, in a world where it's so easy to say, I'm not like them, and it's an us versus them, and the hostility kind of rises, and we demonize other people. In a world like that, you're different. You have this enormous love for all people. You're different. Causes of justice. You're always in the middle of those things. You're different. You are different. When it comes to mercy, it comes off your lips and in the way you live in such a beautiful way, you're different. You walk away from conversations not having started a fight, but you walk away from all conversations with such humility that you're processing, what is it that I can learn here? What is required of you? To act justly. And to love mercy and to walk humbly with God, that marks you. You're different, and I like the way you do. I like that. Jesus is the Christ. He's the Son of the living God. And this morning, let's let him have the last word over us. A new command, Jesus said, I give you. What is to be the rule that guides your life? Love. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Lord, this morning, as we've thought about an angel appearing, Manoah and his wife having conversation, and that question, what is to be the rule that governs my son's life and his work? Today, we want to come face to face with that question in the presence of your Spirit here. What is the rule that is to govern my life? Sometimes we make it so hard when you made it so simple. How about this? Love God. Love people. I'm going to give you a new command. Love one another. Just love one another. If you do this, this is the mark by which the world, they might not believe what you believe. But they're going to love what you do, and they're going to see, truly, you're my disciples. May that mark us. Amen.